trying to pull the genie out of the political hat will be John Cummins now in a couple of minutes. Lots of texts yesterday after we'd Mary Butler on the programme. Great to hear Mary Butler. Had she gone missing for the last few months, says this texter, especially when it came to the airport. No sign of John Cummins at the Count Centre on Saturday, said this texter. Just like another thing that happened to John Cummins a couple of years ago, wasn't seen for a good while. Great coverage on the airport, Damien, over the last month. Have our two junior ministers any opinion on the airport situation? Would they admit they have failed our county in not securing government funding? Despite it having been put in the programme for government prior to the election, I changed my vote because of their announcement. I'd love to hear their views on it. The government have let us down dramatically and consistently on the airport, says this texter. Damien, Mary Butler was patting herself on the back in terms of the airport. I'm sure John Cummins would do the same, says this texter. Councillor Pat Fitz from Sinn Féin had texted in, what did Damien mean by this comment that Fianna Fáil councillors didn't attend the Count Centre because they'd have to listen to Sinn Féin representatives? Sinn Féin councillors and other party reps just went to the Count Centre to tally the count. I must say every councillor and party rep present at the Count Centre behaved in a dignified manner. I never suggested anything else that they wouldn't behave in a dignified manner. Councillor Fitz, I was in touch with some councillors on Saturday and they did say to me that they didn't go to the Count Centre because they couldn't be listening to the Sinn Féin people. Now, any time I see and talk to any of the Sinn Féin representatives at Count Centres, there's no gloating, none whatsoever. But obviously some of the Fianna Fáilers just felt so down about the whole thing that they just couldn't face it. Simple as that. No criticism whatsoever of you, Pat, or any of your ilk. And a person texted me in. He says he's a lifelong Fine Gael voter. He said, was listening to Mary Butler, you need also to bring in John Cummins after the balls Fine Gael and Simon Harris made of the presidential election. I am so peed off with Fine Gael, says this texter. Heather Humphreys had no chance after the withdrawal of Mairead McGuinness. The only person for the job was Sean Kelly. He would have walked in with his GA vote and then take the whip to the councillors, not allowing them to vote. Harris should be out, says this person. 083 333 975. Spooky stories. Now, the screeching witches. We had a lovely text in yesterday about a horror story. I might give that woman a ring later and have a chat with her. John Cummins is here with me in studio. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Damien, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much for talking to me. We're going to talk about housing in a little while, and you weren't hiding in any way. Just refute that text, please.
In relation to the Count Centre or
in relation to the airport?
Absolutely not, Damien. As you know, I was on your programme a few weeks ago up in St. Bridget's, up on the Yellow Road, where we had a great celebration. I was happy to talk about the airport that day, and you chose not to go into the airport, and you said we'd have another opportunity to talk about it another day. So here I am to talk about it another day.
Yeah, perfect. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Again, that was an outside broadcast, so we left it off that day because I just thought it'd be handier to leave it off that day, and there was no real big news at that stage. Just on the election, you didn't turn up at the Count Centre on Saturday. Why?
Well, look, I was out campaigning over the last number of weeks for our candidate, Heather, both in Waterford and around the country when I was visiting areas. I wasn't in a position to attend the Count Centre on Saturday. I'm not sure if you're aware, Damien, but my wife is over 30 weeks pregnant,
and we're
due a baby on the 1st of January, actually. So, as you know, I'm around the country and in Dublin quite a bit, and we're trying to get stuff ready. Babies don't wait, so that's what I was doing on Saturday. My job is very important to me, but you have to take any opportunity that you get to try and get things
organised.
So.
I actually didn't know that, and
thanks
very best of luck to you. I hope everything goes great.
Please, God.
Surely you were around Waterford, so you could have dropped down for an hour.
Yeah, I was in Waterford, and we were outside of Waterford, so look, we were trying to get a few things together and organised, and look, to be honest, I don't get much time to do that, and look, sometimes personal things have to take a priority, and there was an opportunity on Saturday to do that, and we took it. So.
I understand, yeah, and yet Fine Gael had a candidate in the election, and the presidential election is a very important matter, and democracy is very important, and one doesn't want to give any kind of, I suppose, opportunity that those that say the democratic structures are not serving the people, spoil votes in various matters.
Sure, absolutely.
So not to see yourself there, and I said it to Mary Butler as well yesterday, and there was only two Fine Gael councillors there for a short while.
Yeah, and we had 8 or 9 members that contributed to the joint tally there. You would have seen John Fitzpatrick, would have been
there.
Liaising with the...
But only two councillors there, and the TD, like again, so there was nothing, you weren't there in any way because you didn't want Sinn Féin gloating at you or anything like that.
No, Damien, look, that's silly, to be honest with you.
Okay,
like,
but I was surprised.
I had other priorities
on
Saturday, and I think anybody listening to the programme will understand if you have an arrival coming soon and you have to, and you're in Dublin quite a lot and you don't get an opportunity. That was my opportunity on Saturday and Sunday and into the bank holiday this week, and we used it wisely, and I would say we're more prepared now than what we were last week.
Absolutely. So. Now again, Councillor Niamh O'Donovan was there. I had an interview with Niamh. I played it yesterday. The last 6 seconds of the interview, this is what Niamh had to say.
It's disheartening.
Yeah.
Niamh was nearly speechless in so many respects. Now, I spoke to another Fine Gael member who said, yes, Heather Humphreys was in Waterford for one occasion. She came down. She didn't do any interviews on this programme. We emailed her 3 times about it and they didn't get back to us. So I was really disappointed about that, okay? She went to Dunhill and then down to West Waterford, wasn't it?
No, she was in Dunhill.
That was it.
That was the visit,
like, again, she didn't come to the city. She didn't go into the pubs in Dungarvan. She didn't go around Grattan Square. I know her time was limited.
Yeah.
But one Fine Gael member said, even the campaign thing, to go to Dunhill is fine, nothing against Dunhill. But she should have done more in the place that she was in.
Yeah, look, it's difficult with a presidential campaign to be everywhere. Everyone wants you to be everywhere for a significant period of time. And as you know, there was a lot of media in terms of... national media in terms of debates, I think ad nauseum. I think most people were fed up of them, to be honest with you, the amount of them on radio and TV. So
but I wasn't. I would have loved to have talked to her.
No, but the demands obviously were significant. Look, Heather came to Dunhill. It was one of the areas that she would have funded considerably during her time as Minister for Rural and Community Development. Fantastic community out there. We felt that it talked to our campaign of support. Supporting communities, you know, and that's where she went. She engaged with the locals in that area, and it was more to be reflective of the overall. Of course, I would have loved Heather to have been in Waterford for
2 or 3 days. You know, she could have stopped in Dungarvan. You know, again, that's just part of the thing, and that's fair enough. Are there any criticisms, do you believe, in terms of Simon Harris, in terms of how the campaign was won? We heard Jim Darcy this morning talking about basically the party has lost its way, it's going too left-wing, it must return to its roots.
I didn't hear Jim's comments. I'll be talking to him later on. We have the reception for the ladies footballers at 12 o'clock in City Hall. So I didn't hear Jim's comments. But overall, I suppose, look, in terms of the campaign, nobody would have expected the choice that was there, a binary choice between two candidates. If you had anyone on your programme, as you often have commentators, and you would go back, rewind back to 2-3 months ago, everyone would have said we would have had 4 or 5 candidates on the ballot. I think the spoiled votes spoke to the binary choice between two candidates, and you know, look, it's elections are tough business. There hasn't really ever been a correlation between presidential and local and general elections,
and
as you know.
Yeah.
Like Michael D. Higgins came in 2011. The Labour Party were wiped in 2014 and 2016. Peter Casey got a massive vote, wasn't elected to the European Parliament or the Dáil subsequent to that. So look, our priority as a government is to focus on the business and the priorities at hand of running the country. Obviously, you know, I would have liked to have seen the election go a different way, but the people have spoken.
Okay.
I'm a Democrat, and I want to congratulate Catherine and her team on running an excellent campaign, and I wish her well. I look forward to working with her as a minister if I get the opportunity to be in the Oireachtas. There's often opportunities for ministers ministers in terms of, you know, swearing in dignitaries, like, you know, ambassadors, ministers always in attendance. And it would be my pleasure to be there and see her as president.
I know we've got a lot of things to go through, but like part of what Jim had to say was basically he believes the party has gone too left wing, too sort of soft, and needs to return to its base and basically be a pro-business party, and it should return to its roots. Now, obviously, the roots of where Fine Gael came from was the Blue Shirts in the 1930s. Do you believe that Fine Gael has gone too much to the left?
We're a centre party, and we are a pro-business party, and you know, I think the budget shows that in terms of the measures that we've introduced, in terms of the VAT measure for hospitality, I think is a very important and significant measure. We heard that loud and clear right across every town and village and city in the country during the general election. We made a commitment which we have followed through on, and that will save jobs and protect our economy going forward. And if we didn't have that measure and we had cafes and businesses closing in towns and villages, we'd have been criticised for that as well, Damien. So budgets are about choices. You can't do everything in one budget. We have a programme for government to get through. It's a 5-year programme for government. Would I love to do everything in year one? Of course I would love to do everything in year one. But I think what Pascal Donoghue has shown over the last number of years is that he is able to prove prudently manage our public finances. We have put money aside into funds over the last number of years. We will have 20 billion euro in reserves by the end of next year through the prudent financial management of our economy. And I think that's good for the future of our country, especially as we face economic headwinds over the next number of years.
So you don't believe criticism of the budget is warranted? Somebody, people texting in, the budget was a disgrace. It didn't give anything to the ordinary person.
Look, as I said, we have a programme for government. We have 5 budgets.
Yeah.
People will make their judgment on the government and the budgets over the course of 5 years, not just one.
Okay.
And I think we showed that in the last government, that progressively, if you looked at all of the budgets over a 5-year period, that there were significant changes, particularly around tax bans. You know, we increased the tax bans by over 8,000 euro at the higher tax ban in the last government. And we'll look to do something similar over the course of these 5 budgets.
3 topics we want to get through very briefly. I want to give you loads of time on the housing. I'll come to the housing at the end, actually, because I want to give you more time on that. Let's get these out of the way. Mount Congreve first. Any idea on what's happening with Mount Congreve regarding funding?
Yeah, I do actually. I met with the chair of the board, your own Des Whelan, last week. Over the last couple of weeks, I would have been engaged with Minister Boxer Moran, who is the minister for the OPW. He actually is in the office next door to me on the ministerial corridor, which is very helpful. Obviously, as you know, the OPW provides a subvention of 400,000 euro now for the running of Mount Congreve.
That's an annual subvention.
An annual subvention.
I believe it could be 450, no?
Yeah, and what we have ensured over the last couple of weeks is that there is essentially stopgap funding has been put in place to assist with the running of Mount Congreve.
How much?
Approximately 100,000 euro.
So 100,000.
But what we want to do, obviously, is to put that on a more permanent and stable footing. And the board are working on finalising the audited accounts, which will help us, obviously, in making that case. And I look forward to working with them in relation to that, because it is a fantastic asset. There's been over 7 million euro in government funding put into Mount Congreve under the Rural Regeneration and Development Fund over the last number of years. It is a national asset. It's fantastic, and I want to see it continue to go from strength to strength.
Okay, so let's put this in layperson's terms. The government through the OPW was asked for 450,000 euros a year. Okay, so the OPW is committing to 450,000 euros
there.
A year. That's there. Okay, so they're committed to that. But the OPW wasn't able to give 450,000 at the minute because you mentioned the audited accounts. So they're the accounts for last year, 2024. So they're not ready yet.
So imminent is my understanding.
So they're not ready yet. So the OPW, because of the bike shed and because of the complete and utter disgrace that happened regarding the bike shed, the OPW now has got tighter financial controls. So they're basically saying, we're not giving you the 450,000 until you show us the audited accounts from last year. correct?
So there's been stopgap funding.
So stopgap of 100,000 is put in.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So those audited accounts, whenever they come, they come. But in the meantime then, the council are going to be asked for more money, possibly another 200,000 this year, another 200,000 next year. This is a bit of a mess.
Well, no, like what has happened over the last number of years, there's been huge investment.
No, I understand that. I know you said that. But just the current situation, because people have to be paid out there. Like,
they do.
Is the stopgap funding to pay wages?
I assume so, Damien.
Okay. And if the account, here's a scenario.
I'm not on the board.
No, I understand.
Damien, as you'll appreciate.
No, neither am I. But let's say, for example, that the accounts don't come before Christmas, and then the council decide that they're not going to give any more money. What's going to happen then?
So I'm not in the realm of making predictions. Okay. My understanding is that the accounts are imminent.
Great.
And we will make the case then, as we do with lots of items, in terms of making the case for additional funding to ensure that it is put on a sustainable footing. There has obviously been investment in the asset, which is obviously yielding dividend in terms of revenue, both from, you know, the cafe, the accommodation that has been put in, the visitor numbers to the gardens. We want to see that put on a sustainable footing. I think when Michael Welch would have presented to us, when I would have been even on the council at that time, it was always a 10-year proposition in order to get it on a financially stable footing. But it warrants that, because it is world class.
It is. It's absolutely brilliant. Airport, briefly, will you be attending the cutting of the ribbon for the airport when the runway is open?
Well, that'll be depending on who gets invited.
If you're invited.
but no, look, I think what my priority here now, given that we have gone the private investment route, and I would like to congratulate William in relation to pulling that private investment together. And obviously the council have made a decision in the last couple of weeks in relation to that. My priority now is to see that that project is obviously delivered, and more importantly then that we get route development into the airport, because that will obviously open up the airport to operational OPEX funding through the regional airports programme, which I'm absolutely committed to assisting the airport with, and also in relation to Tourism Ireland funding in terms of route promotion and development. There are things that when we have a runway in place at Waterford Airport that we can focus on trying to secure for the region. I've always been a big believer in this proposal. I've always believed that if the runway is extended, that we will get route development into the airport. And as you heard only last week or the week before, you know, Ryanair coming out. But it's not just Ryanair. There's other discussions with other airlines that are ongoing. And, you know, I'll play my part in that.
Are you embarrassed about the way things worked out?
The reality here is that I ensured that this was in the Fine Gael manifesto, that it was in the programme for government. And if you'll give me a moment just to explain, Damien, because there's been a lot of comment that has been said in relation to this particular item. The reality here is that there was a meeting with the Minister and his Secretary General and his heads of aviation in relation to this.
That was in June, was it?
In June or July.
June it was.
And
there was no invite to the board or management of the airport or the investor to strengthen the case at that meeting.
So the CEO of
CEO was
Waterford
invited
as
the CEO,
Council.
But not as chairperson. Yeah. Nobody from the board was invited.
So, but if you could just allow me to make a point. So at that point, it was stated clearly that the public spending code would have to be adhered to, because the 2019 decision, which I would have argued and the airport would have argued strongly over the last number of years, that decision should apply going forward. There was a clear line in that 2019 decision that anything over and above 12 million euros would be borne by the promoters. So they said that the proposal that was before the department was a different proposal, because the quantums of money were different and it would have to go through the public spending code. And I know there are some people that have said that the department were resistant or not trying to help in this. I would actually say that the department offered to actually assist the airport because they actually offered to provide the Cork Airport overlay project, which the government part funded. That went through the exact same procurement and public spending code, and they offered to provide that documentation to Waterford Airport, minus the commercially sensitive information that would have been contained in it, to assist them in the process, which would have taken about 12 months, which to me was utterly frustrating. But ultimately then, while that was being work was being done, this private investment proposal came along. So
you're not in any way blaming the department officials. Minister Mary Butler was on yesterday, and she basically was blaming the department officials.
No, so what I'm saying is, there was an offer of support there. Yeah. There was a subsequent meeting with the chair of the airport board and the CEO of the council and maybe the manager of the airport with aviation officials in relation to that particular element of it subsequent to our meeting
in June. In June, yeah. Like, again, people that I've spoken to on the board and outside of the board say that they believe that that was basically to get you involved in the public spending code to create more delays. So they were basically saying their thought on this was that you were trying to push it out, that the department, whether it's the government or not, but basically there wasn't a willingness by the government to help achieve this positive outcome.
So it was government policy because it was in the programme for government. I would like everything, as I said with the budget, I would like everything delivered in year one in the programme for government. But it is a 5-year programme for government. That process was going to take approximately 12 months. That to me was frustrating. The airport then chose to go the private investment route rather than go through that 12-month process, which the department was willing to assist the airport with. But ultimately, we now have a private sector investment proposal.
I know, yeah.
We will see the runway extended
with no help and from the government. That's the thing. For example, I've just got a text.
And as I said, my focus now is on ensuring that we, when we have that runway in place, that we get the route development into Waterford Airport, which will open up the regional airports programme and OPEX and CAPEX support to the airport and route development funding.
You can't give a written guarantee on that now. You just say that they'll be able to apply for it.
They will be able to apply for it. But Damien, what I would say is I will assist the airport in relation to making that case because if they have route development in the same way as if there was routes flying from Waterford Airport today, albeit that they would have to be with turboprops, they would have access to the regional airports programme. But we're past that. We're now in a situation where we are going to have a runway extension and we're going to be in a situation where we're able to attract those airlines that weren't able to come to Waterford Airport up to now.
Waterford Airport now has a future in spite of the government. That's a message just in now from Councillor Declan Barry, independent councillor in Waterford, who's on the board of Waterford Airport.
Look,
Waterford Airport now has a future in spite of the government.
I would have spoken to Declan a couple of weeks ago in Gorey when he was attending the LAMA conference, and he was interacting with me in relation to this proposal and the upcoming vote that was coming to the council. Obviously, the council relied on a particular section of the Planning and Development Act that it didn't require ministerial consent, but should they have chosen to go the ministerial consent route, it actually would have landed on my desk and I would have been engaged with the CEO, Sean McKeown, as Minister for Local Government and
Planning.
And
the discussion was there on that and they decided not to do that. I have the parliamentary question from David Cullinan to Dara O'Brien on 22nd of October. The Chair of Waterford Airport advised my department in August that an alternative investment proposal did not involve state funding was being considered by Waterford Airport. However, while there have been numerous press articles in recent weeks in relation to this, my officials have not yet been notified of any further development. So the minister only heard about it on the airwaves on WLR. Isn't that bad?
No, I would have spoken to the minister in relation.
Why did he write on 27th of October that basically you haven't been notified of any future developments?
Well, what he's obviously referring to there is official notification into the department. I would have had a discussion with the minister separate to that.
So that's...
But he's referring, obviously, to official notification into his officials in relation to that.
But that's bad as well, isn't it? Like, he should have officially been contacted and told about this.
Well, look, on the day that the proposal became into the public domain, I would have had a conversation with the minister in relation to
it. You heard it first on the radio, did you?
No, I would have been briefed on it, in the weeks leading up to it by the CEO of the council and the CEO of the airport.
We've run way over on time already, but let's talk about social housing. What have you got for us?
Yeah, no, there's a memo going to Cabinet today in relation to progress on the delivery of social and affordable housing. In terms of Waterford, we have over 580 social housing units that are at various stages of the process, from design right through to construction on the ground, which is very very positive in terms of a pipeline here. And that is just the local authority build itself. It excludes the AHBs, the Land Development Agency Part 5, which is any private estate requires 20% in terms of either social or affordable. So the pipeline is strong. I would like to compliment the work that's been done by Waterford City and County Council on a social and affordable side of things. I will be opening an affordable housing development in Tremor in the coming weeks. I'll also be opening cost rental development in Mount Neil in the city, and Minister Brown is opening a number of social housing projects in the coming weeks. So there is a positive pipeline in terms of delivery, and we are focused on other delivery of affordable housing in Dungarvan, in Ardmore, other projects being worked on for the city. There is also cost rental obviously contained in the North Keys that we're working extensively with the developer there and the Land Development Agency. The council has stepped into the cost rental space themselves in terms of Ballinasia. And in addition to all of that, then there is the vacant property refurbishment grant, which has been hugely successful here in Waterford. Over 200 approvals and over 70 applications that have been ultimately paid out on the completions of the work. That's up to €70,000 of support towards turning a derelict property into a permanent home for yourself and your family. And obviously we have very strong figures in terms of the First Home Scheme, which is the bridge the gap scheme between your mortgage and the cost of the unit. So there's a lot of good work being done on the ground, but of course we need to do more, because at the thinnest wedge of the housing crisis is obviously homelessness and those who are in emergency accommodation. That's why we've ring-fenced over $375 million in a second-hand acquisition programme. And we've also now started to ring-fence money to exit families from emergency accommodation as well, particularly in the five cities, Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway and Waterford.
Okay. Fine Gael have been in power since 2011. 2013, spokespersons for your government said they would have eradicated homelessness in Ireland by 2016. 2016, as party leader, Leo presided over Rebuilding Ireland, a strategy with the then Minister Simon Coveney, promised to end the practice of homeless families staying in hotels by the following year. Instead, figures went up to 4,643. The following year, 2017, Minister Coveney said 2,500 homeless children in emergency accommodation was not acceptable. Yet it went up again. He made promises. Then 2018, a Dublin teenager spoke of her struggle of being homeless while going to school, feeling her life has been stolen from her. 2019, homeless official figures hit 10,000 for the first time. The government saying they weren't happy about it. Leo said, "I'm going to change it." That year recorded a budget surplus of €1.4 billion. January 2020, during the election campaign, Fine Gael said the homeless crisis was totally unacceptable and brings shame on us all. The surplus that year, €16.9 billion. June 2022, the president of the country said housing was a disaster. Leo Varadkar told News Talk the current government was not responsible for the housing situation, saying it's a social disaster. We talk about speeches then in 2022 at Béal na Blaoh. Figures went up to 11,000. Talked about his interview with Tommy Bow on Virgin Media, said it was a complex issue. And yet, in places like Finland, similar population, they brought it down to 3,900. Mm. So we're now at figures, August 2025, total number of people experiencing homelessness in Ireland, a record high of 16,353, including 11,208 adults, 5,145 children. Mm. In Waterford, 119 people officially homeless in August. That doesn't include those people that are sleeping on their parents' couches or sleeping wherever the case may be. So I'm going to put it to you that even though you're making efforts in certain aspects regarding social housing, you have failed thousands of people in Ireland. You have failed thousands of children. You have failed thousands of families who are languishing in emotional and physical turmoil.
So what our focus on government is ramping up the delivery of social housing to assist with the very figures that you're just after talking about. And I'm always conscious...
2011. Now, you've had a lot of time to talk,
Minister.
I'm
always conscious when we're talking about figures like this that behind every figure an individual
Is a family. If you really cared about this, you'd have it done. You'd have it sorted. This is the problem I said to Leo Varadkar a number of years ago, and I've said it to a number of ministers. I'm saying to... If a government, and this goes back to the airport, goes back to different things, homelessness, 2011, I can give you more quotes and figures.
Damien,
if you really cared about it.
If this is not about caring. It's not, because this is something that I think about when I get up in the morning and I go to bed at night. I live this. This is my job, all right? I work every single day to try and simplify the planning process to ensure that we can get those housing units that those families and those individuals need through the planning system a lot quicker. And we have made progress in relation to that.
Figures have gone up. It's nearly 17,000, John.
You've gone to 2011. You know how many houses we were building in the country in 2011?
Okay, let's go back to 2011 let's go back to all of that. So let's go to the surplus of... and I know you're going to talk about COVID. There's been billions. But the homeless figures have increased.
You're not allowing me to make a point.
I've allowed you lots of time to make lots of different points.
Okay.
What are you doing regarding the homeless figures?
I have tried to say we have made record funding available for social housing. Some councils are doing excellent work in terms of increasing their own build, which Waterford City and County Council is one of those local authorities, and more local authorities need to step up to the plate in that respect. We have the over 7 billion euro in finance. Every 1 in 3 euro that's going to be spent in this country on everything over the next 5 years is going to be spent on housing or infrastructure to facilitate housing in order to try and assist those very people that you were talking about. And they're not just figures. They're people. They come to my office in Dungarvan.
You don't have to tell me.
To my office
I know
in
that.
Waterford City.
I get them texting me. I know what they do.
I know
you don't have to tell me that. And I'm going to ask you that. So you disagree vehemently with my statement that you have failed thousands of people regarding homelessness. You disagree with that.
So what I am saying is we are trying to increase the number of exits and preventions from homeless accommodation. Last year, there was 9,000 exits and preventions from homeless accommodation. This year, so far, in the first two quarters of the year, there were over 4,500 exits and preventions from homeless accommodation. I don't want to see people enter in homeless accommodation, but if they do, I want to see them exit as quickly as possible. That's why we have ring-fenced funding in order to try and exit families from emergency accommodation, and we have given 375 million to local authorities to purchase properties where somebody is at risk of homelessness. And we will continue to increase our social housing delivery on the other side so that we have accommodation for those people to be able to exit into. That's what we are trying to do as a government every single day of this week. That's my job. That's what I am committed to doing, because I don't want to see those numbers. Nobody wants to see those numbers, because behind every number, there is an individual and a family.
John Cummins, thank you very much.